So my name is Dirk Hondl. I'm Intel's Chief Linux and Open Source Technologist. I've been here a few times, and I have a few times managed to get people really angry with me. Yes. Because I tend to look at things maybe with different glasses than some other people do. Criticism is rarely welcome, unless it's criticism of projects that you hate. I think criticism is the most sincere form of trying to help somebody. And so in that spirit, I'm going to try to annoy you again. No, in all seriousness. When I submitted this talk, I didn't know that I would be speaking right behind John. It turned out this is actually very good, because I'm kind of adding right where he left off. Samba is 20 years old. The underlying protocol is a little older, almost 25 years. And if you look back 20 years, it's kind of interesting to look how computers computing the work that we did worked back then. So the late 80s and early 90s were actually a very interesting area of innovation. It brought us things like the graphical user interface and the mouse. So, I mean, the mouse has been around since the late 60s as a concept, but Xerox PARC and then, of course, Apple brought us the idea that a user interface could be more than just, you know, lines of text. The late 80s brought us what I would call network computing. I mean, certainly X comes to mind, a lot of the protocols, TCP, IP. A lot of this all started in the late 80s, right around when SMB was born. We aren't talking exactly about today's internet. I mean, who of you remembers Gopher? Yes, I'm talking to old people. Awesome. Oh, awesome. Yeah, see, yeah, exactly. So Gopher was officially released in 91, and the same year the World Wide Web actually started with the first paper, and in 92 the technology was ready. I was actually at the University of Würzburg. We were one of the sites that had early access to the very first browser, and we're like, ooh, this is a, what are you doing with this? This is weird. And it seemed so entirely non-useful in the beginning. But if we look back with the wisdom, or at least the time spent of 20 years of web surfing, it's all pretty cool stuff. But if you look at the innovations that the 91-92 timeframe has brought to us, there are many more. Obviously, the Linux kernel is about 20 years old. Samba is about 20 years old. X on PCs is about 20 years old. The internet. A lot of these things are all developed in about the same time. And to me, this is the area of 91-92 is in many ways an inflection point, a point where the computer industry has changed quite dramatically. And so those who were fortunate enough to be around back then, apparently most of you, a lot of great opportunities have been created from that. I mean, a lot of jobs have been created. John talked about these evil big companies that hire developers away from open source products, projects, or hire them to work full-time on these projects. It's quite interesting to see how many companies have actually been created around open source, and how many companies have created jobs around open source. And I think if you had suggested 20 years ago that this would be a tens and hundreds of billion dollar industry, a lot of people would have said, yeah, right, sure, of course. So 20 years later, I'm wondering, in a changing landscape, we had such massive change. Where is the next inflection point? What's going to happen next? And John talked a bit about the future. So let's try and drill down a bit in how did things look 20 years ago, and where have we come from that? Today, these technologies that were brand new and kind of weird and kind of non-obvious 20 years ago are so omnipresent that they are almost invisible. to us, the idea that you use HTTP to connect to a server and get some data and you interact with it, that's obvious. I mean, this is how many software implements their help system today, by redirecting you to a web page. It's the fundamental base technology that we use every day. Same goes for TCP/IP itself, goes for all kinds of networking, whether it's file systems, whether it's email, whether it's Twitter and other. I have no idea what is the latest hype. Instagram apparently is already old because Facebook bought them. There's got to be something new that I just haven't discovered yet. I noticed that I'm getting old because all the things that are new and cool seem really strange to me. Really, Instagram, $1 billion to make camera pictures look old? Wow. I need to go in the startup business. So,
Pinterest.
That's the new thing I need to get on so I look cool.
No,
It's already old. No, I need the new thing so I can look cool again. The 15-year-olds, never mind. So if you look at the computers in the early 90s, so we're thinking Windows 3, anyone? Mac OS 7, a truly highlight of the Mac era. Or for people like me, Linux 0.95 with X386 1.2. Anybody? Yeah, that's awesome. High technology. I was very tempted for once to break my tradition of giving talks without slides, because I was really tempted to show a few pictures of how the desktop looked in the late 90s, or in the early 90s, but then I thought, well, you've all been there, and it's kind of, anyway, it's kind of lame. But so the thing that struck me, though, is if you look at these OSs really broke with what was there before. We moved from the text-based, terminal, console-based world to a world with this desktop metaphor. So where you had files that were in folders, and where you had this desktop that would soon fill up with icons for things that you didn't know what they did. It was really awesome. And if you fast forward 20 years and you look at Mac OS X and OpenSUSE 12.1 or Windows 7, soon to be replaced by the Windows 8 Metro, not a lot has changed, actually. And oh, by the way, whenever something changes, for example, GNOME 3 or Unity or Metro, people scream and yell and say, we want our desktop back, because that's familiar. That's what we can deal with. But so the desktop, I see support for that statement. The desktop metaphor is pretty old, but on the PC, on the computer in front of you, and half of you are doing email right now anyway, so on that computer, that is still what you have 20 years later. It may look a little better. Actually, it looks a lot better. But the fundamental ideas haven't changed. Now, we had this big change. We went from terminals to this desktop metaphor. Let's look at the data center. The data center, prior to the late 80s, was mostly mainframes and minis. I mean, yesterday when I arrived, the first discussion that I overheard was people talking about PDP 11s. That's when you know you're talking to computer geeks. That was my first job ever in university. When I was hired as a sysadmin in school, the first thing I did was to shut down the PDP 11. So I'm young compared to all of you guys who ran the PDP 11s. But in the early 90s, we had this switch from, well, not switch, this transition, the beginning of the change of tides, however you want to phrase that, that went from mainframes and minis to the Unix systems and increasingly Windows NT. And if you look at where we are today, 20 years later, that's kind of still where we are. We have the Unix systems, well, the name has changed, now we call it Linux. And we have Windows NT, the name has changed, we now call it, I think, Windows NT. Where's the Microsoft people? It's Windows Server 2008 R2 point something, right? Yeah, something like that. So in many ways, we had this huge inflection point 20 years ago. And since that, we've seen an evolution. We've seen slow changes, slow improvement, changes in names. I'm not saying the innovation has stopped. I'm saying the innovation has been much more gradual. So today, things like the SMB protocol, Samba as an implementation, or Windows Server as an implementation, Active Directory, they rule many data centers. Interestingly enough, it seems that in the US, I live in the US, I have been there for the last 10 years, Active Directory seems to be much more present in data centers than it appears to be here in Germany or in Europe in general. So I see a slight difference in penetration, but still, you see a lot of these technologies in data centers. But if you look at where's the bleeding edge, as I was trying to find out what's the bleeding edge on social networking, if you look at the bleeding edge, or let's say the where are the massive investments happening, well, I think they're changing a little bit. We see a shift away from those technologies to things like MapReduce, Hadoop, big data processing. We see, I mean, hey, I need to be buzzword compliant, so I need to start talking about the cloud, right? Because anybody that is cloud is immediately investment grade. But we see a lot of these technologies become much more important on the back end, and we see kind of a shift of the way people are thinking about their data centers. People are thinking about their data centers far less in the context of individual computers and their file systems and the sharing between them, but much more truly as a, and I have to use the word, as a cloud of data and of compute capability and how this all works together and how it is presented to be as a user. So when I was asked to submit a talk for today, I was thinking, so when is this next inflection point? And how should we be thinking about the future of the data center and the client and how we interact with data and how this all works together? And so I have been a huge fan of the peak oil theory that says, you know, at some point you're at the maximum point of oil that's available and it's downhill from there. And so I was at first tempted to call my talk Peak Samba. And then I was thinking I would never get on the program with that title. So I'll thanks, Volker. Yeah, being one of the three sponsors of the event really helps. But seriously. So are we at Peak Samba? Is it downhill from here? I want to think about this a little bit. So we hear a lot of talk about this compute continuum, about the change that is happening on how we interact with computers. And one of the things that fascinated me, I've done some, for a different talk I gave a few weeks ago, I did some performance comparisons between my cell phone and the computer that I started working on Linux with. And it turns out that, of course, my cell phone is like 100 times more capable than my first Linux computer 20 years ago, and that's really sad. But, well, actually it's really good, but it's really sad in how little you can do with that thing. So tablets, phones, and if you think about it, increasingly cars. We've seen all these connected cars, because what I want most is the driver next to me going 180 on the Autobahn, having a Twitter message come up in his screen. Yes. Connected cars, connected TVs, because we don't have enough distractions, so we need live Twitter feeds that correspond to the TV show that we're watching or something, I don't know. This idea of constant connectivity. How many of you get really nervous if they don't have access to email for about 20 minutes because T-Mobile's data network is down? Come on, be honest. See, yeah. Most of you are lying. Anyway.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, those who are raising the hand are.
I only get nervous if I don't have connectivity to Twitter.
Okay, yeah. So as a personal side note, about a year and a half ago, I went to Australia and did a liveaboard for scuba diving at the Great Barrier Reef. It was wonderful. We were there between two huge cyclones, and the largest typhoon to ever make landfall in Australia missed us by about 6 hours. It was awesome. But the thing that was fun is that on this boat, for 60 hours, I had no internet. And that is a heartbreaking experience. And a lot of people who interact with me on a regular basis, like, for example, my wife, were really surprised that they wouldn't get a response from me for days. That's very unusual. And I had true withdrawal symptoms. So yes, we are used to being constantly connected. Other things are changing. If you look at the user interfaces, the user experience, so I talked about the mouse as the great new innovation 20 years ago. Today, for a lot of people, the great new innovation is touch. And I see this when I find myself on my computer. I use a MacBook Air, but I run Linux on it, and I just want to touch that screen and nothing happens. It's really annoying. And my children do the same thing when they sit at home and they play on the computer and it doesn't react to touch. It's just wrong. And I talked, the last time I spoke here at Samba XP, I mentioned this effect that I've noticed that to us, or to the current generation, to the kids, to people who are new to computing, search seems like a much more natural way to access data than is this desktop metaphor with the files and the folders and the hierarchy, and you need to find where stuff is. Other things that are very current is location-based computing. So when you use your phone as your main client device, and Google smartly connects you to the local Google homepage, which is awesome when I come to Germany, since I happen to speak the language. I was in Korea 6 weeks ago, and everything was in Korean. That was a little more challenging, especially since the switch to English is actually written in Korean. And so you need to find the little link that switches you to English in Korean. Well thought through. Other things that are brand new, anybody here on Google Plus? The only place where geeks can talk to geeks and no one but geeks? Yeah, exactly. And everyone is all a Twitter and all a Google Plus about the Google Glasses, these augmented reality things that make you look even more dorky than you already look. I want those. Have you seen the wonderful, sorry to the Microsoft people, have you seen the wonderful video about the Google Glasses made by Microsoft? You got to Google that. It's awesome. It shows you how this experience would work if it was Windows-based. It's really funny. Again, apologies to the Microsoft guys. It's good fun. And the other thing is services like Dropbox, or what is Google's version of Dropbox called? Google Drive. Thank you, Google Drive. And there is the Microsoft SkyDrive. See, it's crowdsourcing. I knew I could do this. Anyway, so whoa, that was loud. So the idea of data being in the cloud and therefore being everywhere. So I went through a list of things that I see as, maybe they as a whole, or some of them, or a combination of them, are driving what I think of as this next inflection point, this next fundamental change to the way we do computing, we interact with computing, the way this computing world works. So if we go back to the mainframe and the green terminal, and then this TCP/IP file system desktop-based world, and then whatever that next thing is. Niels Bohr said, prediction is very difficult, especially when it is about the future. I think he was onto something. So I don't think I can predict the future. But what I can do is I can ask a few questions about it. So I think computers will be around. And I don't just say this because I work for Intel, and would really suck if they weren't around anymore. But I think we will be engaged with computers very much as we are today. Many of us, most of us who are developers, will almost certainly still want a keyboard, because writing C code or Python on an iPad is a horrifying experience. Seriously, I mean, as a consumption device, I love these things. Tablets are awesome. As an authoring device, even writing emails is very challenging. So I think we will continue to have something that we think of as a, let's call it personal computer, even though I think that's an IBM trademark. I think these devices, whether they have a keyboard or not, will have some concept of a local file system. The big innovation for Windows 7 was supposed to be WinFS, the database-based file system for Windows, which was then postponed to Windows 8, and which I believe has just been kicked out of the plans for Windows 9 and pushed into Windows 10. But we will have some form of local data storage. Let's call it data storage. I'm pretty sure there will be, I hope, there will be some form of authorization and authentication that helps us keep some resemblance of privacy, even though our Google overlords work very hard to make sure there is no such thing. I currently run 3 different browsers just to be able to, on the one hand, use all these services, and on the other hand, get them away from all the other things that I want to do on the web that are none of their effing business. And thank you, Facebook and Google and all those companies. You make my life so much easier. So when I say they will have some form of file system, there will be some networking, there will be some authentication, that sounds like awesome Samba, we have a future. But the question is, will they work the way we think of file sharing today? Will they work, we think of Active Directory today? And what will the protocols be that are being used? Will it be something like SMB? And one of the things that I found very interesting, if you've used OwnCloud or Dropbox or Google Drive or SkyDrive, whatever, before, you will see that a lot of these use a very different protocol suite at the back end. They use HTTP, they use WebDAV, they use things that go through every firewall, or at least through most proxies. You will see that the way that files are presented to you, or that your data is presented to you, is beginning to change. Yes, Dropbox still initially gives you this file layout with folders. But if you use something like OwnCloud, you can actually say, oh, this isn't files, this is PIM data. So don't present this to me as files, just take it into your calendaring tool, into your contacts database. Don't pretend that this is files. This is emails, don't show it to me as files. And so we're beginning to see this shift away from a file-based metaphor for the data to a much more concept-based metaphor for data. And then if we go away from the client for a moment and we switch to the data center and we say, so how are data centers dealing with files? Is this going to be a SIFS kind of world? And the interesting thing, you go to conferences like Strata or other data-focused events, and everyone talks about distributed file systems. They talk about things like Lustre or GFS or a handful of proprietary alternatives to that. So we see a lot of thought not of having file systems shared from servers to other machines, but a file system existing throughout your data center. And everyone has what to them is perceived as all the files or none of the files, depending on how well this is implemented. And our internal sample data center to illustrate how well this works. In the middle of doing a presentation to a senior vice president, went into the none of the data mode, which was awesome. It's a really, really good engineering moment. So yes, so distributed file systems are certainly arriving in the data center. And so I asked myself when I went through all these technologies and all these ideas, so what's the space for Samba and related technologies in 5 years or 10 years or in 20 years when John wants to give the 40 years of Samba presentation at Samba XP, and many of us will come in on our wheelchairs and listen to him. I don't think we will see a lot of Samba implementations on phones, tablets, cars, I hope not in cars, and other similar mobile devices. I'm going out on a limb here. I think this is not the main target platform. I don't think we will see a lot of large cloud data centers, so the Google data center, the Facebook data center, the Twitter data center, to rely primarily on Samba and its technologies. I'm very, I guess I'll say I have no clue about large enterprises. Today, large enterprises in the US certainly are very much SIFS-based, AD-based. I see a lot of companies coming in and saying, this needs to change, we want to change. I'll say I have no idea. But the place where I don't think we'll see change for a decade at least, if not longer, to me is SMB, not meaning the Samba protocol, but small and medium businesses. If you look at the average small company, their network, the way they interact with computers, this is the space where I see the least change, the least desire to go into the next millennium. Yes, we've seen some companies that have switched to things like Google Apps that are using cloud-based services, and we usually hear about them because Google Apps is down and they say, oh, sorry, we can't handle your support request. We've seen companies try, Salesforce.com is hugely successful in entering the small and medium business market and getting people to run their software in a remote data center. But by and large, if you talk to people who have customers in the small and medium business environment, most everyone today is running small networks with file sharing, with a standard AD authentication, or you know, one of the other alternatives for that. And I see very little tendency in this space for aggressive change. Now, the big question, of course, that I ask myself, if is that a growth scenario? Is that something where you say, ooh, exciting, this is where billions are going to be made? Is this the space where you want to start your latest startup, targeting the small, medium business market with a 20-year-old technology? Sounds catchy, doesn't it? So where is the leadership? Where is Samba? Where is the idea of this protocol suite going? We in open source have often been criticized from our dear friends in Redmond, from Steve Jobs and his ancestors, replacement, what's his name? Tom, Crook, whatever. We've often been accused that all we do is we copy. We take what's out there and then we re-implement this in open source. And after doing open source for 20 years, well, the term open source was only coined 15 years ago, but doing free software, I guess, for 20 years, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that often that's true. A lot of what we do is that we implement existing ideas, we just do it better. Software that sucks less was a big tagline for a while. But so if I look at where are we going with Samba, where are we going with projects that have been hugely successful, that have created a tremendous amount of great code, And I'm trying to create this excitement and say, awesome, this is what we're going to talk about at the 15th Samba XP and at the 20th Samba XP. I'm kind of lacking for ideas. And so what I have here in my notes is the question, am I confused? Am I missing something? Am I just asking for too much? Am I just spoiled by hanging out with too many Facebook kids who have lots of exciting things to talk about? Or is this really peak Samba? Are we at peak Samba and it's all downhill from here? And I'm very sad to see some of you nodding. That's not the reaction I wanted. I expected people to throw stuff at me. So basically what we're doing here is we're doing the COBOL of the 2020s. Lifetime employment for all of us, because we know how to fix this when the next big problem comes up and it all breaks. Nodding, lots of nodding. Okay, so we switch this from Samba XP to COBOL XP. Awesome, I like that. I was aiming a little higher. I was hoping for you guys to yell really great ideas at me and show me why I'm wrong and why there is a bright future. Now, before you yell at me, I know you will. He always yells at me. Let me say one thing. So Samba has been a really good creator of cool technologies, of little libraries, little this and that, and code pieces that have taken on a life on their own, little database fragments and things like that. So Samba has been a great source for technology. So one of my ideas of how I could end this talk was, well, let's talk about the technologies that have come out of Samba and how they will be relevant in this bleak horror scenario of the future where everything just works that I talked about. But yeah, Jeremy.
Question, or you just stole my comment.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. That's essentially what I was going to say. I think you are correct in that the protocols themselves will slowly decline, simply because the uses module, as I said a few years ago, file sharing on a LAN is old, dead technology, essentially. It'll migrate into the data center like Solaris did and sort of slowly go into its graying years. I think you're a little wrong about the phones not using SMB. I've actually helped a bunch of Android using companies to put SMB on phones simply because people have a bunch of stolen movies on their local media servers. And they all want to play those movies on on their phones, right?
They are so perfectly legitimate copies.
Sorry, yes, thank you. The perfectly legitimate copies that people have on their home media centers that they want to play on their phones and tablets or whatever. And actually, SMB and SMB2, they're pretty good protocols for streaming video. They work really well for that. I think you're right. I think if, you know, in Samba 40 years, it may still have the same name, but it will be a completely different set of technologies. And it will be the new technologies that we create out of, you know, TDB, T-Event, CTDB, TALOC. Those and those are kind of spin-off technologies, but you can see them being adopted in many other places. And maybe we'll end up as, you know, the Samba Code Foundry. Who knows?
I like the Samba Code Foundry. Yeah. I would like to make a small recommendation. If you want to talk about the future of Samba, using stolen movies as an example, maybe not the best. But I. Well, hey, you live in the United States of the MPIAA mafia. I see your point. Yes, I'm not trying to say that the protocols are useless. And I'm totally scared to hear that you actually implemented this under Android and have people streaming to their phones. That just freaks me out. But I guess it's a testament to the strength of the technology. But to me, what is really interesting is the TALOCs and the technology pieces and where things can go from there. But I guess what I'm hoping for is this great debate and people will hate me. So what's Samba 5 going to be? I mean, I know you only took about, what, 12 years to release Samba 4, but nearly there, almost. It's measured in decades now, I know. So what's Samba 5 going to be? What are the, and Johannes is desperately trying to get my attention. What is this next big thing that takes these awesome technologies, that takes this code base that is very impressive, and creates something exciting, something that points into the next decade? Let's be careful. Let's next decade or two. And would you give the microphone to Johannes?
Wait. Just as an insult, perhaps, I don't know. The peak of Samba was in 2008. But it was only one peak, and we have several peaks to count. In 2003, more or less, AD was introduced to the market, let's say 2003. And 5 years after AD, people still sticked to Samba and NT4 domains, and it was more or less a bit going away, but not so harsh. And then people went away from Samba as a service for small and medium business. So, which I told to the Samba team in 2010 and 2009 was that we lost our support revenues almost totally. That means in the former days when Samba was written on the SUSE box and Red Hat box, here you can build up a Samba server with this tiny Linux distribution, everybody did that. And then in 2008 this was gone. So peak was somewhere there, and then this declined until now. We have no support. We have some support business, but it's with big companies. On the other hand, we have since CERNET has been established 15 years ago, an increasing amount of work with developing technologies. Yeah. And Samba people are very creative. They are very focused to special features, name it CTDB, name it SMB, and all that flavors that comes around, NTLM, authentication stuff, and now AD implemented. And I'm sure that this will go on, and that the Samba team will be able to focus on technologies that are necessary in the future. One point is cloud computing, and we are asked, and people are asking, how do we control ACLs on public clouds? Yeah. And Samba team is one of the groups that can help finding a solution that via HTTP or whatever is embedded there, or whatever is helping us to transport data to a cloud resource where I have to control my ACL somehow. There's one thing where Samba team can help. If it's SMB or whatever it is, you have to help in authentication and in identification of users and who, what data belongs to which user, and encryption and all that stuff. So this is my point. Samba is a group of technology. It's something that will go on. The other thing is, what is with AD and Samba 4 now? Will we get back a reasonable amount of users that adopt SMB, that adopt Samba 4 Active Directory under Linux in their small and medium business networks? And I see Zarafa as something that in Europe is an alternative groupware that really runs through the market. Zarafa is something all people look at, and as we just announced by the end of last year internally, it will be a press release this week, that we just offer a Debian distribution with a ready running Zarafa schema extension in Samba for Active Directory controller under Linux. This got really backscattered to us to say, hey, yes, we want that. If you use Zarafa, we want an Active Directory controller onto Linux, for sure. And this is an interesting question, how big the market share will be. Nobody knows.
Yeah, and what you just said is the reason why I picked 2012 for peak Samba. Because I think that Samba 4, if and when it ever gets released, as an Active Directory server certainly will create excitement and will give more use and more exposure to Samba. The challenge that I want to pose to you, and that hopefully by Friday I will see a Google Plus post from Jeremy or someone that says Dirk was wrong, and that shows us all the innovative ideas for what's the next thing where the Samba team wants to go, where we are taking these technologies, and that will make us come back for the next 10 or 20 years to these conferences and has us discuss all the wonderful things we can do. And on this hopefully somewhat happy note, I'll end my talk. Thank you.